Welcome to the Tripod, where we break down the NRL every game, every week from a punting perspective. I'm Jacob Wynn. He's the Podonis. We're here to break down round 14 live and in what's been the worst season we've had in 8 seasons. That was probably our worst round of tips so far as well. So these are tough times. We went 1-5 on our best bets, which we capped off with an exclamation mark being on the Eels game that just wrapped up then. We lost the mixed matchup. We didn't get a multi-home. We actually had a multi-riding into the Eels, as I'm sure just about everybody watching today did. And I tell you, games like that, it just makes you think the bookies can pull strings, because I just feel like a round where 7 favourites covered the line and everyone had something rolling into Parramatta, and that is one of the most dumbfounding results you'll ever see. What was the final score? They lost by 30-odd. 34-4. But look, just in general, obviously, I want to say, like, this is a horrible feeling. It hasn't been as enjoyable as I would like it to be, you know, bringing the pod to you guys and bringing the tips to you guys because of the results. It really, really hurts. The truth of the matter, when I try and take a step back and I think about it, we're 19 and 25. We're 43% winners. You know, we've given out 8 years of tips where we've gone 41% losses for over 4,000 tips. So now we're 43% winners on 45 tips. So I have to kind of think that if you do something for long enough, it'd be completely impossible to not have a span like this. You get your extremes. You know, in the long run, you might win 3 out of every 5. If you were going to win 3 out of every 5 every weekend, you wouldn't need another job. You'd go 5 big bets and you know you're going to win 3 of them. Unfortunately, it's a lot more variable than that. And I mean, like, we've had an 18 best bet win streak in the past. So you can't have these extreme runs. I guess what I'm getting at is I've been a part of a lot of extreme runs in betting. You can't have all the extremes, but never have the bad times as well. And I don't actually want to call it a run. We're over half the season. I think we've got to accept, you know, people call it a run when they're losing, but people just call it their results when they're winning. It's been, you know, a really poor season of results. I don't feel like we've picked enough great tips. I know when you're losing, when you've given out more losses than wins, then anytime you lose one, even if you lose right on the siren like we did in the opening game of the round, people just dismiss, oh, another crap tip. But they're not all that bad. We got a bit of a rough end of the stick on the weekend, and then a couple were shocking. We'll go through game by game. We also want to hear what you guys reckon, but your kind of reaction, Podonis, to that nightmare round 14 in general.
Yeah, look, we've had a couple losing rounds so far this year, but this one was definitely the worst, with a 1-5. Couple tips, as you mentioned, that weren't even close, and we definitely were on the wrong side. Dragons Cowboys game aside, and it's a good point you touched on that there has been a successful run over the past 7-8 years, and if I'm talking about it myself personally, I've only come onto the Tripod this season. I know last year I tipped in the group on in the app and on the group away from the spotlight of this broadcast and this show each week. So I do want to put my best foot forward as well, give you guys winning tips and winning advice. So it does hurt and we do feel it. And that's why we're here to face the music as we do every week.
And you're in a tough position too, because I talked you into a couple of the sides that fell flat on their face. You know, I remember we didn't even love Para, but then I said, oh, I found a play. We've just got to take Para because we, you know, they're going to win. And we found odds that were too good. And then, I mean, it doesn't matter what kind of line or what market you get in some teams when you get a complete and utter no-show. But yeah, you're in a tough spot when, you know, my tips and I'm having the final say and my calls, you know, aren't good enough, then it's going to be hard. Now, look, in almost any game, like today, nobody can make the case Parramatta was a good bet or anything like that. Sometimes there's a game where it's like far and away, one side was never going to kind of not cover. Other games, you know, a moment here or there, a decision here or there, whatever, you can say, oh, the game could have gone differently. So I feel like punters can often make excuses for losses because they can always pinpoint the exact optimal moment of the game and say, oh, see, my bet was good there, but then this happened, if that happened. So we don't want to do that. That's not going to do us any good. It's not going to help our listeners. It's not going to help us find winners. We want to try and dissect the games and look at them objectively. There's a few bets we had this round that I would take again, and then there's a few that I do regret. So we want to go game by game. It's definitely not excuse making. You know, one other point. A year ago, right at this time, we were 67% on best bets. So I think you see the extremes where a year ago I was saying every week, I can't keep this up. And I was saying, hey, you know, we might have got lucky there. We might have got a couple of close ones going our way. 67% last year, 43% this year. The truth of the matter, our ability probably lies between the two. You know, we definitely believe we can win higher than 55% and in the high 50s and find profitable tips. But in a short term, you are just at the mercy of, you know, the variable results, player personnel in and out, which we'll get to as well. But we will talk about all the games. Why don't we start? One we should talk a fair bit about, this kind of set the tone for our whole round, was the round opener, Cowboys 31 beating the Dragons 12. And Podonis, your general thoughts on the game? We had two best bets. We had plus 6.5 first half. I think the Dragons were down 14 at halftime, so that was no good. And then we had plus 2.5 tries, which was covering after 79.5 minutes, and that was absolutely cruel. And that gives you an example where people can say that the Cowboys smoked the Dragons. It was 2-1 in the first half, and it was 2-1 in the second half, and it was 4-2, 78th minute, 79th minute. Dragons are attacking the Cowboys line. The odds of losing our try handicap is 1 in 20, 1 in 50 for the Cowboys to get the ball and score. So maybe I'll just start by talking about what happened in that final 2 minutes. Zach Lomax got the ball. That was not a good thing for the Dragons at all on Friday night. He threw a no-look forward pass into row 4. That's okay. We didn't need a try there. I thought the Dragons were going to get a late try and actually make the game closer. We didn't need a try there. But then the Dragons gave away a penalty, final set, invited the Cowboys in, let in a try on the siren, lost 5-2. It set us up for a shocking round with a shocking result, going 0-2 on best bets.
Yeah, for sure. And you touched on that try at the end that killed us. It killed us in multiple ways, because not only when Lomax got the ball there, I thought the Dragons were going to score as well, and then we would have won the first leg in our multi, which we had Cowboys to win.
Cows 1-10.
Mm-hmm. So it was a disappointing end. And what was even more frustrating was that the last minute, the Cowboys weren't even trying. They were just running out from dummy half, happy to wind the clock down in the final 40 seconds. Bullshit penalty. And then they go up the other end and the Dragons switch off. And then all of a sudden it's 31 points on the board, and it sinks our 2.5 try handicap, which was a great edge considering all the talk coming out of the game was how dominant the Cowboys were. But I think the game was a lot closer on paper than what the final scoreline showed. And we were right just before kickoff when the team list came out and we saw those outs for Cotter. Holmes did play, which was a bit of a surprise, but I think he looked a bit limited and hampered anyway, given he had such a grueling origin. So I wasn't too discouraged. But then the Dragons didn't touch the ball in the first 9 minutes, and they were down 10-0 before they even blinked and got a full set completed. So it was always tough to come from behind. And the Dragons are just shooting themselves in the foot, I felt, making error after error. They had plenty of opportunities. They made a few line breaks. I thought the Dragons looked decent with the ball, but the Cowboys are just a bit too clinical. And again, their defensive wall that they've built this season, it's been a phenomenal turnaround. We have to give them credit where credit's due. It's another game where they've conceded only one try in the second half. I think they've only conceded 38 points all season in the second half, which is just unbelievable for where they were last year, close to the wooden spoon. So props to Peyton and the guys, but I do feel that that's one that we would take back, and feel pretty unlucky to lose that and not go 1-1 at least.
Yeah, so the line's 12.5. Like, two out of the three origin players in question didn't play for the Cowboys. I can't remember though. Sims might have been ruled out for the Dragons as well, so we didn't really get any joy in terms of origin players backing up. Ben Hunt did, but your point you made there, we've had a first half bet and the Dragons didn't complete a set, I think, until well after 10 minutes. Now, that's their fault. They spilled the ball in their own territory first set. They actually got an attacking set and Sully spilled the ball in the play of the ball. But there were 4 set restarts in the first 10 minutes to the Cowboys. I get that the refs, they want to set the tone. They want to say, look, I'm not allowing any rubbish. I'm going to be really strict early. But like, if you give them all to one side, you've got a team that's a 12-point underdog that's down. You said 10-0. It was either 10-0 or 12-0. After 10 minutes, it's very hard to recover from that. I don't think the Dragons got as many set restarts in 80 as what the Cowboys got in the first 10. So they were completely on the back foot. They do fight back in the game. I want to play a little game with you, actually. I know we're spending longer on this, but it set the tone for our round. We had two best bets. Okay, I'm going to play a game with you, and I'm putting you on the spot. So I'll try and do the heavy lifting. We're just going to name terrible mistakes that the Dragons made throughout the night, because I reckon you'd get to 20 killer mistakes by the Dragons, and you still should have covered the try handicap. Okay, so, well, they scored a try. Ramsey scored a try, but Sully didn't run through the line. So it was pulled back for obstruction. We had the first try after halftime, Lomax trying his stupid no-look flick pass, flicks it straight into Taulungi's leg and hands the Cowboys 6 points. There were two other occasions, one at the end of the game, which was brutal, and another time where Lomax got the ball and also tried his flick no-look, and it was either forward or over the sideline. Another one, you mentioned a few Dragons line breaks, and just throw any that come to mind for you as well in there. But, like, they made a line break on first tackle. Lomax streaking down the sideline. Maybe he passed inside and score. He tries to do a no-look grubber along the sideline for himself, which then just goes into touch. We had Moses Mbai on a fifth tackle, went blindside and just got and gave it to DeBell and got tackled. Moses Mbai chiming in again, kick out on the full. I think Lomax didn't convert his first two tries, whereas the Cowboys, I can't remember if they missed a conversion. It's just one of these games where you felt like the Dragons did so many things wrong. Now, I also will say the Dragons missed a lot of tackles. And when the Dragons made line breaks, the Cowboys' scramble was really impressive. And that goes back to the fact they've got more heart. They are very fit. And you've got to be, you know, brave and pick good spots to go against them. So we got served there when we took on a good side with a bit of a feeble team in the Dragons. And this game reminded me also why we don't bet the Dragons very often. It was the first time we took them all season, because I'm watching them going, oh, yeah, I hate betting on a team that's got them by trying to make plays or a bunch of these forwards that don't break the game. But having said all that, I just think so many things went wrong and they still probably should have covered the game. They looked the fresher team. They looked like the team coming off the bye, and they looked like they were coming over the top. Not that they would have got the result, but I think they would have closed it to a one-score game late. And as we know, just more shooting themselves in the foot. I don't know, any other moments did I miss? Because I'm sure there were way more, Podonis, but I don't know if any come to mind or we move to Saturday.
Just quickly, the one that I'm thinking of is Ben Hunt when he made a 50-meter line break, and then on the very next play, they go two passes left instead of right when there was about a 5-on-2 around the hour mark. So there was a few left out there. And I think if there's any hair left in Griffin's head, it's all gone now.
Yeah, and mine as well. Saturday didn't get any better. I want to talk about more of the betting theory of this game. Rabbitohs 30, Titans 16. Our best bet was Titans plus 4.5 in the first half, but the halftime score was 12-4 to the Rabbitohs, so that went down as well. Okay, this was a nightmare from the moment that we gave out the tip. We had one Titan that was going to back up. That was Tino. He backs up, but he plays from the bench and only gets on in the final 7 minutes of the first half when they're already down 12-4. In the second half, Tino scores two tries. So we were counting on the Titans captain backing up. Our only bet was a first half bet. We got 7 minutes of him. We barely even got him. We had AJ Brimson ruled out with COVID on the day of the game. I saw the headline was COVID crisis hits Titans with player ruled out and several others having a flu or a virus. The line went from 6.5 to 10.5 on game day. The Rabbitohs had Murray and Cook in question to back up 3 days after Origin. Of course, both backed up and were important for the Rabbitohs. And the reason I think, the result aside, which actually the game was like the Rabbitohs deserved to win, but they didn't completely dominate. It was another game where after the Rabbitohs got the first two tries, the Titans were actually knocking on the door late in the first half. Could have covered, but just the way things are going for us, no good. But my overall point, because we don't know when we make these bets, we don't know a player is going to be ruled out for COVID or the best player on the team is not going to play almost the whole entirety of our bet. We don't know these things, right? But when you take a plus 4.5 in the first half and everything that possibly could have gone wrong basically did go wrong, and when the game kicks off, the first half line is still 4.5. That's a really strong play because you're going to win half the time if you are on kind of a line that's the closing line, roughly speaking. So it was probably worthwhile playing. And at the end of the day, you lose two tries to one first half again, but you don't get any joy with the conversions. So I think this would be a bet where it would be easy to say that's another terrible bet, but I would take it again, you know, not if I, and this is the thing, we didn't include the Titans on like our weekend multi. We didn't include the Knights on the weekend multi that you gave out yesterday because we wouldn't have taken those bets at kickoff. But knowing what we knew Wednesday, which is all we can do is make the bets based on what we know on a Wednesday, I think those type of plays in the long run will be successful. It just wasn't on Saturday. But what did you take away from that match?
Yeah, I 100% agree. And it just goes to show you the confidence level we did have in the Titans. We didn't trust them across the full game. That's why we narrowed down the first half line at 4.5 because we thought that for them to have a chance, they'd have to start well. And I felt that they did start well. And it was very, very similar to last week against the Cowboys, I felt, where they had plenty of opportunities and attacking sets, but they just couldn't seem to convert. Brimson was a big out. They did look disjointed at the back there. And all credit to South. So I think South played a bit better than what we first thought. They had their Origin guys backing up as well, but I thought Murray and Cook were their best players on the field, as was Walker. I picked up where he left off against the Tigers, and I think that buy has done them some good, and South are starting to etch their way back into the mainstay there, the top eight. They're coming six at the moment, and they're starting to round into some form, and they can look ahead to getting Latrell Mitchell back. And the Gold Coast, I don't know where they go to. Tino only played about 50 minutes in that game, and he scored two tries, you said, and one of them was just at the end when he was on the wing, which was pretty funny. I don't know how he ended up out there. And they're still.
It's one of those classic, I have to do everything myself plays. Yeah. When your prop is going over to the wing to get it from dummy half and pushing Bill out of the way to score. So it's almost an indictment on the Titans, the rest of the team.
And, yeah, look, Dave Fifita still has to come back in this game, in this team as well. So they can look to improve, but I think week to week, they're just going to look to just to play well as a side and just to give something back to the fans, because I think the top eight's long gone and Holbrook will be fighting to keep his job.
You would say top eight long gone, like, because all the good teams are winning. I mean, apart from the Roosters, which we'll get to next, who played a really strong opponent, and Parramatta today, like, it's not going to be a low win total like it was last year to make the eight. It's not going to be easy to make the four. There's a lot of teams mounting pressure. So the biggest losers of this round are the two teams I've given out futures on. I mean, Parramatta we'll get to, and the Roosters is the next game. But, yeah, the Titans, you mentioned Fifita's out. We didn't know Brimo was going to be get COVID, obviously, and then Tino barely playing in the first half. That's their three best players, so that was rough. If there's a criticism of our Souths play, I suppose knowing the importance of that game to Souths because they have all these teams nipping at the heels, we knew that, and they were off a bye. So it wasn't surprising to see Souths play well, and the fact that they backed up their Origin players was because they knew the importance of, like, they couldn't let that game slip. They had to get 2 points. You don't like betting against sides like that. But, you know, we thought the game should also be important to the Gold Coast because they needed to prove something. But clearly it wasn't as important to them because they're now just thinking, let's try and win a game here or there where we can, and let's not burn Tino out and let's give him a rest. So we ended up with the less desperate side, and that's never a good thing. Now, a couple of great games on Saturday night, which we didn't have best bets on, so at least they weren't as painful to watch. The Storm beat the Roosters 26-18. Your thoughts first on this one.
Yeah, I felt this was a back-and-forth game, and I think both sides really showed that they were up for it and wanted the win. They both played their full-strength teams pretty much. Everyone backed up that was fit and available. The Roosters started off well. It was a very high-scoring contest for what it is in past years, where it's normally been a bit tight and tense, but there was four tries in the first half, and Suali got the game off to a great start, scoring on the right side there with a flick pass for Manu, who's just left off where he's been the last few weeks in great form. And I think what told in this game, it could have went either way. And I think the concussion and the HIAs to both of the Roosters halves were the telling one in this one, where we saw Keary come off in the first half. And then in the second half, Walker was on the wrong end of a tackle from Kafusi, and Kafusi landed on top of him And there's a bit of contention around that because Kafusi's facing a judiciary charge for a stray elbow on the way down to the ground there. So he might be in a bit of hot water, but I think that really threw the Roosters out. And their left side defense couldn't handle what the Storm were throwing at them. They had two tries to Anderson on debut, so credit to him. And then Marion Seve as well in his, I think it was his second game this season, filling in on the right center, and he had two barge over tries. So I think the Roosters are really going to lament the fact that they let in a few tries down that left side. And the game was in the balance, 18 to 20, with about eight to go. And then Kafusi with a breakaway try to seal the win for the Storm and keeps pace with the Panthers and keeps the Roosters just outside of the four again.
The Roosters really needed to win this one, and they've got a tough stretch. We keep talking about that. They've got a game in 2 weeks against Penrith. It's like nobody can expect to beat Penrith, but they've got Parramatta next week, which actually that takes on a new light, that game next week. But, you know, you could have made an argument the Roosters would rest players like Teddy and stuff, just desperate to try and get 2 points next week. But once they played everyone and had the lead on a couple of occasions in this game, they just had to find a way to win it. Now, you didn't mention the two craziest plays of the game. This match had a 12-point swing twice, one to either side. In the first half, the Roosters, after getting up 6-0, they let in the try that it's back to 6-all. They instantly concede a length of the field line break off that very next Storm set. Jerome Hughes is streaking away. He's a certainty to score. He can put it down anywhere he likes, but he steps back infield and is met by a freight train, which is Joey Suali, who is 18 but looks like the most powerful athlete on the whole field. And he jams him on the try line and then holds him up. And it's contentious because there's millimeters in it. And they ended up using a slow-mo replay freeze frame. And Hughes got the ball to the line after a few seconds wrestling. And they said that the whistle of held came when it was a centimeter up. But regardless, go and watch that highlight. In fact, chuck the highlights on from this game. It was a beauty of a game. Both sides looking really good in attack until Walker and Keary both had to go off. But both sides back and forth. That was an amazing play. And the Roosters scored the next set. So it should have been 12-6 Storm. It was suddenly 12-6 Roosters. So that gave them a huge sniff. Storm got back. It was 12-10 at halftime. I noted in the group something I've never seen before. The Roosters were $2.50 favorites. Underdogs. Going into the game, right? And they were leading 12-10 at halftime, and the live odds had them at 280 to win. And I said, I've never seen a team that's an underdog leading at halftime, but their head-to-head odds are longer than what they were to start the game. It's because Keary had been ruled out, and maybe live trading, like people saw that and were smashing Storm. So Storm was still a big favorite at halftime when they were down. But the other moment that you didn't mention, which people, you know, could be aware of, with, I think, 10 to go just before that knockout try by the Storm. The Roosters are on the Storm's line. They're down two. Walker puts a beauty of a kick over the top, and Tupanua streaking through, and it's in the breadbasket. And if he catches it, he scores by the post. And the Roosters are up four inside the final 10 minutes, bless you. But he spills it, and the Storm scored the next set. And so that was a 12-point moment, and that was the knockout blow against the Roosters. And that's brutal for them. And so if you're a Roosters fan, you're going to be lamenting that moment. But I think you should also remember, well, there was a 12-point swing the other way first half. So wild game, big result by the Storm. These kind of games where everyone pours everything in and it's in the balance, it's always going to be a huge win for one side, and it's going to be a really heavy toll for the losing side. So that's the way it goes. And we do need to monitor this Keary situation because he's got a history of head knocks. And he copped friendly fire knee to kind of like the top of the head. He looked a bit distressed when he went off. There's no certainty that, you know, he's going to be right to play next week, or, I mean, fingers crossed that it's nothing too bad that jeopardizes his season. We know how, you know, how serious these things are taken and have to be. So brutal result for the Roosters. Big one for the Storm. And then,
they're currently sitting at 7-7 at the moment. In eighth spot on 14 points. In our futures play, the one that's still alive on Dabble, we need them to make the top four. How do you feel about that at the moment?
Yeah, so like I think that's sunk now. I thought that Raiders loss was brutal. I thought they had to have that one, and that's a game that cost us a best bet. But like That's a game that could have gone either way as well. They lost the game by, what, 4 or 6 points, and they conceded a charge down try. So my point is they were in a battle in Canberra. Game could go either way. They lose that. And then you come to the Storm and it's the same thing, and it could go either way and you lose that. And everybody else keeps winning. Broncos, which we'll get to next. Cowboys, previously. It's just going to be hard. Obviously, Storm and Melbourne, you're going to pretty much pencil them in, or probably in pen now, that they're top four. So it's just probably too tall of a task for the Roosters. I mean, it just depends. Radley comes back, let's say. We're at Hargraves. Obviously, they lost him. So they've lost some of these key players right for their toughest stretch, and they are origin affected. So unfortunately, I always knew that was the hardest leg of that double multi, and it was like 50-50 for the Roosters to make the four, but we'll need a minor miracle for that one now. Just the last fortnight has not worked out well. But your side is flying, mate. Are you enjoying the Kevolution? It was 24-18 Brisbane over the Raiders, their seventh win in a row.
Seventh win in a row. And can you believe that when they lost to the Panthers down in Sydney, 42-4, about 2 months ago now, and then they've gone on a seven match win streak since then. After they were down at halftime against the Bulldogs as well, in that game at Suncorp, and they've come back, won that second half 24-0, and they haven't looked back. And the Broncos are just absolutely flying, and well deserved for the club. And I know that I'm excited, as is many other fans in the tripod. And I think anyone who backed our play we gave out on the season preview at $3.20 to make the top eight, you could pretty much almost cash that now. It's around $1.10 on some places. And the Broncos have looked good, and this game was no different in a back-and-forth game. I lean Brisbane, you lean Canberra heading into the round. And it was one of those games that could have went either way. Brisbane did end up getting the cover. And I felt that Canberra had everything to play for in that second half, where Brisbane were down and busted and had no one on their bench in the final 15 minutes. And that was the story of the game, Brisbane holding on to the final 15 minutes when Canberra had all the momentum and energy and attacking the line quite a few times. And Brisbane found a way to hold on and get it done. And shout out to Ezra Mann, who's really stepped up after he's been given his shot with Adam Reynolds' injury. And he scored a try and set up one, and is looking a shining light in attack, and offers a different dimension to what Tyson Gamble does. And he, I feel he complements Reynolds well. And I guess we're just going to have to monitor heading into next week and beyond the status of Reynolds with that rib injury and Payne Haas's shoulder, because those are two pretty key players for the Broncos. And I feel sorry for Harvey Farnworth as well, because it looks like his season might be over with a torn bicep. That's normally about a 12 to 14 week recovery, which would put him almost towards the back end of the final. So tough night for the club, even though they did get their seventh win.
Yeah, really gutsy considering all the injuries. So coming into the game, they already decided they were resting Capewell. Then they rested Cobbo. Reynolds was out during the game, rib injury. Haas out early, shoulder. And then Farnworth and probably season. And they are saying, fortunately for the Broncos, the Reynolds and Haas injuries don't look too bad on the surface. So it was so gutsy for them just in this match to hold on and win. I thought Carrigan backing up was immense again. He is a true star in this forward pack. And Mam obviously come in and held his own covering for Reynolds. Those games Reynolds were out before the bye. And that was a different role. He was coming in playing halfback. And now they're saying Gamble's got stress fractures. And so Mam's probably the full-time 5/8 rest of the season. And he looks even better. He's freed up at 5/8 because now he's not doing any organizing, and he's given a green light just to run the footy, and he's an elusive runner. And you've got a good mix there with Billy Walters and Corey Pakes as well, a dummy in the dummy half role. Tamari Martin, got to give credit as well, is really doing a great job. And they've unearthed him. You know, he wasn't on anybody's radar, really. So it's really sad to lose Farnworth, because what I really liked about Brisbane was some of these sides, they have a side they favour in attack. Like, you know, they want to go one way or the other, and they're always just trying to set up to get back to a side. But Brisbane felt really dangerous on the left, whether it be throwing it out to, you know, that side with Capewell, Farnworth, Oates, was just as deadly as going the other way and going, you know, the side with Staggs and Cobbo. So they offered threats. So I'm not sure if you know off the top of your head who the replacement would likely be for Farnworth there.
Breakout Lee.
Oh, Branko Lee, who was playing right centre last night, but okay, so he'll play. But yeah, it's just not the same attacking threat, so that one hurts. But the injuries, that is going to be part of the season for everybody, and overall it's still really positive signs. As I said, it's a Kevolution down there. Brisbane, they're loving it. They're on an absolute roll, and they look like a serious top four side when you consider who was out on Saturday night. And the Raiders are no joke, and the Raiders were knocking on the door late and had the opportunities to win the game and have been playing good footy the last month themselves, but a really strong home win by an excited Broncos crowd. Let's move to Sunday, where the Seagulls beat West Tigers 30-4 at Campbelltown. It was only 6-4 at halftime, and then it was all Manly in the second half, but honest.
Yeah, I think in the first half, really saw the energy that the Tigers tried to bring and tried to match Manly's intensity. I think we'll just touch on the fact that just pre-game in this one, Evans was ruled out on the Friday before the weekend, which was a cruel blow for them. I think he got injured in the second half in the Origin there, and they led on that it wasn't as severe as it was, but I think he's out. Potentially next week as well. We have to monitor that heading to the team list tomorrow. But the Tigers with their brand new coach and Kamali and what was a revitalized crowd, thinking that they can dawn a new era in Tiger Town, and more of the same and frustrating watch if you are a Tigers fan. I felt in the first half, the game was pretty even, and 6-4 was probably a fair reflection of the scoreline. And then in the second half, Tigers, I look back to that intercept that they took at 6-4, where they could have taken the lead. They just couldn't execute on the few plays after that, when they had a 70-meter intercept, and then they had two tackles and got tackled on the last tackle and bombed a try on the left-hand edge. Manly scored two tries, and all of a sudden it's 16-4. And then what killed the game was a Brent Naden send-off with about 20 to go, where he tipped over at Trbojevic. And he's looking like he's going to have a pretty big stint on the sidelines. And then Manly ran in a few late tries at 13-12 with a man advantage. But 30-4 didn't show the true reflection of the scoreline. And we did say that we were wary about Manly, given that they did need to win to keep pressure on the top eight. And they put in a great effort and matched the Tigers' intensity. And that's what you have to do against these teams with not much to play for when they really aim in for one game. And I felt the Tigers did aim up for this one and they came to play, but Manly matched that and showed their class in the end.
Yeah, Brent Naden won't be in the new coach's good books because they actually would have had the opening try, but he spilled a one-handed put down. And that was like one of several opportunities they bombed because it was, I think, a 2-on-1 or a 3-on-1. And he juggled it, but then he regathered it, spilled it. And obviously the send-off late, which then just generates all the momentum, not to mention the man advantage that allows Manly to run in those late tries. Not that the Tigers would have come back at that point at 16-4, but it extended the scoreline. Because the first half, it was very even. Both sides bombed a few chances, to be honest. And yeah, it's in the balance. But I think Manly, a side that we know is a bully, when they get a bit of momentum, they do know how to harness that. And New Zealand played them into form. And I said this in the preview, like they played a guy like Olakau'atu into form because he trampled the Warriors last week and he just carried that form straight into this game, trampled the Tigers as well. So it's a big effort by the Seagulls. When the Tigers look to start positively, but when they didn't take their opportunities, you have to when you're a poor side. And that just allowed the Seagulls to gain total control of this one and keep their season well and truly alive and keep putting pressure on the top eight. We'll monitor that DC injury, obviously. But other than that, pretty positive day out for Manly to go so well and not miss him. Next game was a game we had a best bet on and it got destroyed. And this is one that, I would like my time over again for sure. Panthers 42 beat the Knights 6. Oh, what was the halftime score, Podonis? It was about 22 or 24-0. 26-0. We had plus 8.5 first half. Now, look, it's another one where we were hoping that more Panthers players would not play. In the end, only Yo was ruled out from the time we did the pod on a Wednesday. So To'o, Crichton, you expected. Martin was probably 50-50. Cleary and Luai all backed up. I think they definitely wanted to, and this is probably the part I got wrong, was not understanding how much they would all want to back up because they lost. And because half this Panthers side is the New South Wales side, the Panthers came out on Sunday and played like they had been beaten last week. They played angry and they took their frustrations out on the Knights. Now, in saying all that, once it was known that actually nobody else was going to be withdrawn and that Panthers were close to full strength, the line still was only like minus 17 and a half. So it's another one where we took plus 8.5 and, you know, the best you would have got is plus 9.5, which is virtually the same bet. Whereas earlier in the week, I saw the line actually coming down to 13.5 with the speculation that Panthers were going to have more players out. So it's another one where I think the process isn't bad. But in saying that, I just probably underestimated that Penrith, would come out with such a focus and determination. And when they do that, you basically are dead. And that's why, you know, we weren't telling people to back this on Saturday or on Sunday once that was the case. But, you know, people do trust us and back our tips on Wednesday. And sometimes you get good odds or you get a better line. And sometimes it doesn't pan out your way and you get left with bets that you don't love. And there's still no excuse for how badly Newcastle played on the other side of the equation. They're off a bye. They're at home. Now putrid. And I suppose, again, no excuses here because I can judge whether I like a bet based on how confident I feel kind of as the game begins. And I was really worried. I could make a case for it on Wednesday. And in retrospect, I wish we obviously never played that for the reasons I've kind of said of misjudging the form of the Panthers. But Ponga getting knocked out when the Panthers scored the second try as well. It's just another one of these things that went badly. So Newcastle, extremely disappointing. But then you kind of think to yourself, would Penrith have done that to just about anybody on the weekend?
Well, Penrith's performance, I think in that first half especially, was one of the best that I've seen this season with the freedom and energy that they played with. That didn't really give the Knights a chance. And it was 24-0, and then there was a late penalty goal just on the stroke of halftime to make it 26-0, and I felt that it could have been even more. And we took the Knights, as you touched on, we took the Knights plus 8.5 with the expectation and the chance that this could have closed at 10.5 for a full match line. But then once we found out all the play news over the weekend, the line was at 16.5 still, then I would have felt more confident laying the minus with the Panthers. So that's probably one for us to work on moving forward, that when our bet does not have that same confidence level just before kickoff, then it's hard to be a 60% winner, which is what we strive for. So Knights, yeah, still had all the chances in the world and everything to play for in front of their home fans, and very, very similar at the moment how the club's going to the Gold Coast Titans, where they just can't seem to get any momentum or a winning run together. And I think that's four straight home games now where they've lost by 20 plus, and they have faced some good sides in that run, but still no excuses. And there's nothing more to say on this game, that the Panthers were just completely dominant start to finish.
Yeah, and I do think in both those teams' cases, the Gold Coast Titans and the Knights, where they only can play well when things go their way, I do wonder if the coach's message is getting through. Because I hope people don't feel this way about the recap. I don't know if it's entertaining for people to watch us go through these struggles and the trials and tribulations of 2022. I like watching, I'm a bit of a sadist, if that's the word, watching the press conferences of losing coaches, because I think you really hear about whether they've got answers or if they don't. But after a while, it sounds a bit repetitive, like it's the same excuses, and it's the same excuses for O'Brien. It's the same excuses for Holbrook. And O'Brien's gone, oh, you know, this is not going to be an easy fix. This is going to take time. I mean, to be fair, this is your third season coaching the Knights. So when you came in, you took that job. It was a desirable job to you. Did you come in your opening press conference 2.5 years ago and say, now, don't expect much, you know, we're going to take a long time to build? Or has not much good happened in the last 2.5 years? You've got to take some responsibility. You can't act like you've been handed a rebuild job when it's your third season, in my opinion. I really think that the Knights don't have the excuse to be going as badly as they are. And I think you hit the nail on the head to go back to why this was a bad tip, because I think it's fine to play a line where you think there's plenty of opportunities where that line could reduce. So you grab that high plus and you don't know the future and you don't know which players will play and which won't, but you create a scenario where you might end up with a way better bet. But I think for it to be a really good bet, you've still got to like it at the current number, assuming kind of the worst case. And we wouldn't have liked Knights plus 8.5 if we knew how strong the Panthers were going to be. So we shouldn't have taken that, because there always was that possibility Penrith players would back up. So, I got led down the garden path reading some articles that said Penrith was going to play it safe. And I recall last year they rested players when they could. And obviously they won the comp, so you thought they'd do the same this year. But no, as we know, they came out and they made mincemeat of the Knights. Now, this is a positive game to talk about. Our one winning bet of the weekend, we took Sharks to win both halves. They did, and they won the game 38-16, despite the fact that New Zealand was up 12-0. And I thought, here we go again, Padonis.
Yeah, it was a one shining light for our tips this round, the Sharks, but it looked a lot gloomy as well when the Warriors got out to a 12-0 lead, and we saw the effect that Stacey Jones looked like he had on the playing group, where they looked a lot freer and had more energy than in past weeks. And I think it really showed, and credit to the Warriors. But the one thing we did say with the Sharks is that they have the talent and they're great with the ball. And even if the Warriors do come to play, and I felt that they did that, the Sharks just have too much class and be able to just expose the Warriors, because there are some weaknesses still in the outside backs and on their edge forwards. And I felt the Sharks did that. And in the end, they ran away with the scoreline. Even though in the first 15 minutes, either side of halftime, the Warriors were the better team in that period. But yeah, the Sharks ended up getting 38-16 win. Our best bet was Sharks to win both halves, which was a great edge at the time on Wednesday, and proved that way as well on the game on Sunday. And I don't take anything away from the Warriors. I still feel that they're heading into the next few weeks where they do look forward to getting back to New Zealand, and they do want to put in a good performance to get some form just before that, because they do want to see a decent crowd there. And I think for the Sharks, it was equally important for them just to stay in touch with that top six and top four battle, because they were in danger of slipping to the same level the Roosters are at the moment. So the Sharks show some consistency, because they haven't lost two games back-to-back yet this year. But I think for them to be really taken seriously as a premiership threat, that I feel that they need to go on a run and win a few games in a row now, and especially against some of these good sides coming up, because I don't think they've beaten an elite team yet, except for that Parramatta game when they scored that try in the last minute. So plenty for both sides to work on, but just happy to get a win.
And that was round two. But if you're evaluating the Warriors, like, Johnson still doesn't look himself. He didn't have a good game again. Curran came back and actually did look strong and did seem to tighten up their middle and add a bit of a threat. Now, I do think we've got a terribly unlucky ending in that Dragons game. Cost us the best bet. The Titans-Rabbitohs game was closer than it looks and could have gone either way. We won this one, and on face value, the Sharks won by 22. So it would be easy for us to say, oh, we won this easy. We got quite lucky to win this. When you're down 12-0 in the first half, you're an underdog to win the half. And the Warriors was self-inflicted wounds. It was, I know they kicked out on the full again once the Sharkies had scored. They had to play the ball sideways. They had multiple just terrible mistakes. So if you're evaluating the Warriors, you're thinking, these are things that you can clean up. These are areas that aren't that hard to improve, because they're such horrible, as I said, self-inflicted wounds. If they can clean that up and cut that out, then they can be more competitive. But Cronulla scored 24 straight. And so obviously one half of our bet done. We win the first half by 12. And then we essentially had 13 plus, which kind of was the line, or exactly what I said on Wednesday. I said win both halves is usually about equivalent to a 13 plus. So we kind of had the bet we wanted. The live line was minus 25.5. So we're basically a certainty for the Sharks to carry on with it on the back of scoring four in a row. We got pretty lucky second half, I've got to say. The Warriors bombed a try where they didn't pass to Watenis Lesniak. Then they did score the opening try the second half with an amazing put down that he managed. You're thinking, oh, yeah, there's a bit more fight in this team, as you said, Stacey Jones, different energy, inspiration there. The Sharkies did score the final three tries of the game, but you had the Mulitalo put down, which goes up a no try, and they must have spent nearly 10 minutes of real time looking at that and somehow said that by a leg hair he stayed in. I don't know about that, but they give that one to the Sharks. That was very deflating to the Warriors. The next Sharks try was a spilled kick return by Walsh, or trying to gather a grubber in the in-goal, spills it, and Kennedy comes through and grounds it. And then the final try of the game was an intercept by Katoa and goes 60 meters and scores. And, you know, I was actually thinking that Warriors were going to get a backdoor try there and would have actually cut the margin to like 18 or 16, and we wouldn't have... No, they could have cut the margin, sorry. It was only 16 at the time, so they could have cut the margin to 12. I think it was 18, but you get my point. It was a 12 halftime. So if the Warriors had scored like 6 points at the end of the game instead of throwing that intercept, we actually would have lost this bet. So we didn't win until we took a 60-meter intercept, basically. So, hey, if we're going to complain about being unlucky, we actually got kind of lucky there. So the Sharkies were a little bit sloppy and got some favorable bounces in that game, but they did enough to win for sure. And the Warriors, well, the Warriors play one last game at Redcliffe this season. So you might say it's a chance to farewell their adopted home, but they're up against the Panthers. So I would say well done to anyone that laid the 21.5, which was shared by the Undertaker in the group. I think it already would be a bit higher than that now. Okay, finally, we've got to explain this one before we get out of here. Bulldogs 34 beat the Eels 4. Our best bet was Eels to win both halves, so you can't get much more wrong than that. But we weren't on an island in this one. Look, here's what I'll say. Up until today, I don't think I'd seen around this season. And I will just say Tristan's video didn't upload, but you can kind of predict what he said. He said everything was rolling into Parramatta in different variations today. He said, obviously, they got smoked, the bookies, over the weekend with every favourite coming in, winning and covering. All the multis were alive. He said, in particular, a lot of money came on Penrith once the team lists were known. So that line climbed and a lot of money was on them. Trying to think the other side that he said a lot of people... Oh, Cronulla as well. He said a lot of punters smashed Cronulla, and that obviously got up. And then every man and his dog had a game on, had a bet involving the Eels. And I always think to myself, it's never that easy to win money. You just don't get every favorite winning easy. So I came today thinking, surely not. Surely, like, this isn't going to be the fly in the ointment. In terms of closing line value, I'm certainly not going to say that that vindicates our bet. But our bet was $1.50 at kickoff today. The line had climbed all the way to 18.5. I think if you didn't have money on para, or maybe if you had a multi riding, it was a good opportunity to hedge back, because the bookies had so much liability on para that they just massively decreased the Parramatta odds in every market, and they increased the line because they did not want any more Parramatta bets. They were already so lopsided in their action. So you definitely got value late in the Bulldogs. And that's something that's, you know, a shortcoming or a limitation of us. We don't give late bets. Like, go back to what you said before. Would we have played Penrith with the line knowing what we knew? You know, on Top Sport, you still could have played first half -6.5, even at kickoff. Mm. Yeah, with Penrith over the Knights. And you could have played Souths -2.5 at kickoff, or -3.5 it was.
Yeah.
So it just goes to show that, like, you still could have even hedged and maybe middled our best bets, even when everything went wrong against them. So it's hard for us because we can't be caught kind of endorsing both sides, and then it looks like we can't lose if we tip both sides. So we have to just kind of live by what we say on Wednesday when everyone is watching and when everyone can check. But it does go to show that you don't have to be limited by that. If you understand why we tip something and things don't go our way, there can be opportunities if you've gotten a number that beats the market to come back on the other side. Now, in saying that, certainly hedging was the right option in this game because it was quite astonishing. The Bulldogs just, well, every moment that could have gone their way did go their way. They just had all the running. You know, I watched the New South Wales Cup game before this one, and Parramatta played the Bulldogs and were winning 16-4. And then the Bulldogs ran in like the final 30 points. And then watched the first grade game and the Bulldogs ran in the first 28 points in this game. And I'm thinking someone has dead set poisoned the Gatorade in the Parramatta sheds or something. Cause I couldn't believe my eyes. Can you explain how that transpired?
You just scratched your head there. And I think that sums up the entire 80 minutes that we all just watched. That's happened to Parramatta twice now this season, when they lost an $1.03 favorite to the Eels at a similar spread.
To the Tigers. But Tigers, people said that. It was a Monday. They were like, $1.03 and they lost. But there's a big difference. They lost on a field goal on the siren. Today they lost by 30. So this is like a whole new level of shock result.
What odds would you have given for that, 100 to 1?
I mean, even Bulldogs like 13 plus, you know, could have been like 40 to 1. Yeah. Honestly, they were like $7 or $8 just head to head. So now we're talking 30 plus. Yeah, it's just not fathomable. Eels full strength. And now, mind you, Dylan Brown probably shouldn't have played. I think he retweaked his ankle, but all their Origin forwards backed up. So how it, I'm stunned. I mean, the Bulldogs certainly got momentum and they could sniff it. They were getting on top and they could, and a team that hasn't won many games, they're often, when they do get a chance to win, then they're used to kind of being downtrodden and dropping their heads. Suddenly everyone is energized. Like, hey, we're on here. We need to, you know, keep pushing, put the pedal to the metal. So they were just completely amped, but I still was waiting all game for a Parramatta comeback of some sort. It just never came. They were just unbelievably flat. But any other observation you had there? As O'Keefe says, they were $10, as much as $10 you could have got dogs head-to-head. So I'm talking, 30 plus. I'm talking 500 to 1.
Yeah, for sure. And just to touch on our bet itself, when the line was 15 and a half, and it goes to touch on something you said with the Panthers game, the line was 15 and a half on Wednesday when we did the podcast, and we found a great line with the $1.80 to win both halves. But if that wasn't available and it was just the 15, would we have been confident enough to lay the minus 15 at the time? My answer would be no. So that's probably something for us to consider next time, is that if we're confident that they should be winning both halves, then why wouldn't we lay the 15? So because we would question that ourselves, and was it really the best bet to give out? So I'm happy to say that we got that one wrong. And this game itself, still, unbelievable. Dogs are winning 6-0. And, okay, sure, they score one try. Someone has to score first. And then what really stunned me was when Campbell Gillard goes through and draw and pass to his inside man. And really, Averillo gave up his position, and he was going for that intercept. So all Gillard had to do was just dummy it. And he's under the sticks, and it's 6-all, and Parra probably get back into it and make it a contest again, because they started off flat and the Dogs dominated them physically. But then once Averillo took that intercept and goes down the other end and it's 12-0, then it lifts the crowd and it gave them something to play for, because one of the reasons we did like the Eels was that we felt the Dogs were coming in on a bit of a flat spot, given that they just had 2 weeks in a row where they try their hardest. But maybe we just got to give a bit more credit to the Bulldogs that under Mick Potter, they've found a new level of intensity that was lacking under Barrett, because they have came to play. They've scored more points than they ever have. And a couple of their tries, and I think back to the one just at the end there when it was 28-4 and there was 2 minutes to go and they had two inside passes and offload, and then Burden with a grubber to Averillo from 35 out. That was great play. And a top four side could put on a play like that. And we know the Dogs are sitting last at the moment, and that win definitely does hurt our futures play of Bulldogs to win the Wooden Spoon, but one of those ones where I think Parramatta would love to have their time again, but everything they touched, is it was like they were passing with a rock, not a football.
I forgot about Bulldogs Wooden Spoon as well, because they're the biggest underdogs of the round, and they were the biggest underdogs of the round, and they come out and win like that, and that's 4 out of 4 games since Potter has been in control, I believe, and the Dogs have gone over their team total because he is encouraging more attacking footy. And you can mention moments like Parramatta's going to score, but they throw an intercept and the Dogs score. And then another try the Dogs got later was an Adokar intercept. He had a hat trick, right? And definitely making a statement in terms of Origin 2 selections. But it's almost like when the scoreline's that far apart, it's almost like it doesn't matter. You can name a bunch of big moments and then none of them went the Eels' way, but it still doesn't excuse like how they only had 4 points in that game. So they just were just completely off, like obviously still on holidays and switched off from their bye round. Maybe they went super light on their workload and didn't, you know, warm up enough or get enough into the legs to actually be ready to play today, because they're so far off the pace. It was crazy. And that's a brutal one for everyone that did have multis riding today. You know, if we lose a best bet like we did in that game and it's that far off being right, I live with that. You know, I'm pretty comfortable knowing that when you get a game totally wrong, you lose. The ones that hurt me are the ones that are much more narrow and when you're in a good position and then it doesn't go your way. So we're going to have to lick our wounds. We're going to have to definitely reconsider the way we're going about things this season. We, you know, all I can say is we could spend 10 minutes figuring out who we think we want to play for best bets on a Wednesday. We could still go 3-2, 3-1, 3-0. We could. But we don't do that because in the long run, there's no shortcuts. We take a long time. We put a lot of hours. A lot goes in to trying to come up with the best plays we can. And it's really failed so far this season. But we just have to stick to our process of giving it our best shot and trying to give you guys the reasons why we like our plays. And then it's up to you what you think of our reasoning, whether you're going to jump on them, or if you think we're going that badly, then you can oppose and you can usually get a good price, you know, the other way. Just to go back to what you said about Parramatta, but honest, we wouldn't have laid 15 and a half, but $1.80 is a gift for a 15 and a half point favorite to win both halves. So that's equivalent to like -12.5. And would we have laid -12.5 with Parra on Wednesday? Probably. That's the way I see it. So yeah, I think you can't second guess that one too much based on what we thought of these sides and the spot. It was a day that Parramatta had every chance to succeed. The fact that it went so horribly wrong, you got to reevaluate, you know, what you made of both sides. And as you said, the Bulldogs were impressive and Parramatta fell so flat. And yes, I am aware that obviously I said this week that I'd back Parramatta at $12 to win the comp and definitely expected them to win this round and to look good. So, you know, did I curse them with the way that our best bets have gone the last couple of weeks? Did I put the mock on them? That's how I'm feeling right now. It seems to be going that way. But that is punting. Everyone's been through really tough streaks. Everyone has learned the hard way that it's not easy to win every week. We are learning that in front of everyone's eyes. We appreciate you guys who do tune in. We hope you have a good week. Let us know your feedback for sure. We'll be back Wednesday to share our thoughts on round 15. And then there'll be an Origin, a rep break after that. Thanks for joining me as well, Podonis. Hope you enjoyed your long weekend, and I'll chat to you again on Wednesday.
No worries. Leg up.